Good evening.
What is up?
Excellent. It's working the first time.
You know what? I'm doing something different tonight, so that's good. That's a good sign.
All right. Well, then, shall we just jump right in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to yet another week of the Flex Fox Fantasy Federation's weekly podcast. Once again, I am your host, Garth Newton, coming to you from my attic here in lovely New Hamburg, Ontario. And with me, as always, my dutiful and loyal sidekick, the Whiz Kid, Jeremiah. How's it going?
You're saving me from the horrible drawl of Buck Martinez on the TV right now, so I owe you.
I mean, honestly, this is something that we should offer everyone. If anyone needs to avoid the drawl of Buck Martinez, just call me. I'll talk with you. It'll be okay.
So, full disclosure, my fiance knows nothing about sports, like nothing at all. And I watch the Jays game pretty often after work on the TV. And she has remarked probably like 10 times since opening day. And I quote, "Whose fucking annoying voice is that on the TV? And why do they talk that way?"
I like that.
She knows nothing. Nothing.
Well, I mean, full disclosure, my wife knows a great deal about baseball. And every time Buck Martinez is on, she asks if there's an alternate audio feed that Sportsnet might give us. We'll pay the premium. We don't care.
200 IQ move for sure.
Well, good stuff. Well, Jeremiah, how's it feel to be back? We're back in the swing of things now officially. We've got one full week under our belt. We have results that we get to talk about. How's that feel? How are you feeling?
I'm officially excited, to be honest with you. Even though I lost, I'm
sure.
Excited. I'm excited.
Okay. Well, then, you know what? Sometimes it's like putting on just a good old pair of pants, you know? Like, it's comfortable. You know you're just going to slide into them real nice, like, and the way it'll just cup your butt. Let's jump in and talk about our top scoring team from week one. And I'm not sure that anybody really expected this, but we're talking, of course, about the matchup between the Staddle Monsters and the Star Boys, where one Stads comes out massively on top with a 441.1 total over Ben's 308. What did you think about that matchup?
So I'm going to pat you on the back here. I don't have a lot to say about it because I know we got to keep these brief, but what is it you say exactly? As Otani and Vlad go, Ian goes. I think that's something like that, right?
Yeah, that's exactly
So his top 3 point getters were Shohei Otani, Drew Rasmussen, which, you know, you could see it. And his third is Vladimir Guerrero. I don't know if that's good validation for you, but like a pat on the back for that, because that those two together got about 100 points.
Yeah, significantly more. Otani got 68 by himself. And that's absolutely the way I've seen it. And maybe it's just because I've been lucky or potentially unlucky of watching Stads in my own division all these years. I've paid closer attention to his team. And any time that Otani and Vlad do well, so does he. There's just no other force on his team, for better or for worse, that seems to make that decision more often than those two.
Well, I mean, you're in some other leagues, I imagine. I know I am. And Otani, I think it's not hyperbole to say that he is the most valuable player when he's one player and can be used every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the longer you have a matchup, the more useful he actually is, right? So you get two starts out of him no matter what. You get to use that advantage over the course of one matchup against one person. So you can accumulate massive points like that. So I think like if all matchups were 2 weeks, Ian would go 19-0.
Ooh, now there's a take for you. All right. Well, that's fair. I mean, on the flip side of the coin, it's not like Ben had a horrible showing. I mean, he's now sitting currently in 15th. So, you know, kind of low down a little bit. But the positive takeaways is that his top scorers being Bogarts, Tucker, and Alcantara, those are the guys you want to see, right? Now we need to get a little bit more out of sort of the secondary elements on his squad, and they exist. And they just couldn't beat Stads this week.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with that angle too, but I kind of look at it a different way. So you have Bogarts, Tucker, and Alcantara leading your team, and you still only put up 300 points.
Mm-hmm.
which to me kind of says, well, like you're hinting at, the secondary pieces really didn't come to play ball, in which case maybe they're not really secondary pieces, right? Maybe they're tertiary pieces or guys that you should be kind of rotating in and out or trying to flip. But that's probably a little bit early to say. But like if you continue this trend, that would be kind of my train of thought.
Yeah, that's fair. Like when I look at his secondary pieces, I'm looking at people like Tyler O'Neill, like Sean Murphy, like Paul Goldschmidt. Like that alone is probably a top three selection on most other squads, right? He's got the depth, you know. He doesn't need a lot out of, say, Yu Darvish. He doesn't need a lot out of Max Fried, but they're going to lead his team any number of times over the course of the season. And so if it all comes together, he's definitely got a team that can compete. It just so happens that so does Stads, and that's kind of scary.
Well, I think the problem for Ben is all those pieces, like a lot of the pieces you're mentioning, the Goldschmidts, the Darvishes, like they're old. The wheels could come off or at least decline, get wiggly at any point, right? The thing with like with O'Neill too, right, is I kind of think he's done in St. Louis. I don't know if you've been following that like not hustling play. But he, ever since that, he's been kind of like on the bench for guys like Dylan Carlson and Alec Burleson and guys like that, right? He's almost relegated to a fourth outfielder. And I do not believe for a second that managers aren't petty pieces of shit. So I would not be surprised if Oliver Marmol just kind of relegated him to the bench and said, fuck you. And he asked for a trade behind closed doors. I actually think he'd be a great fit in Toronto, but that's neither here nor there, I guess.
I mean, he doesn't look better than Kiermaier, so I don't know that the front office will go for it.
That's true, but Springer is made of glass, so it's only a matter of time.
All right, hot takes all around. Well, congratulations, Stads, for taking that number one overall win for the week. So kudos to you. Let's jump to I'm now just going right from the scoreboard, and I'm just going to go from the top right down to the bottom, which I means we're probably going to cover your matchup pretty late, but it means that we get to cover my horrible matchup first. So, you know, full disclosure, the Measure of Force put up a 260.1 final number going up against the Midland Raccoons, 335.7, which was more than enough. I'm not gonna post excuses. You know, that number would be great if it wasn't, you know, 10 days long to get there. So I'm sitting happily in 19th overall and looking up at a great number of people with a lot of catching up to do already.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't it just like poetic justice that the top scoring player for the Raccoons was Marcus Stroman? I mean, I think it is. I think it is. So that's a really interesting point. But you know what, like with your team, when I look at it, I mean, I am a bit concerned, just with the composition, just with the age. We're kind of have like the young infield, which is taking some painful time to grow, which is fine. But then you have like an older outfield, your pitching staff is suspect, I would say at this point. They're not the most reliable characters ever. But the silver lining being that Matt Brash trade's looking pretty sweet when he puts up 20 points for you. So you still got the trade IQ, my friend.
I mean, cool. I just need to do that about 20 more times to break even, it would appear. Because honestly, if one of your middle inning relievers is a top three scorer, it doesn't really matter how good that trade went.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Eflin's hurt now, right? So he can't be your top point getter this week. So.
Yeah, and Herman Marquez is also going in to have his forearm evaluated. So it's good news all around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for the later parts of this episode when we talk about how my team will lose two in a row.
All right.
For now, we will call kudos to Sonny Gray and as well as Gore, who put up the number two and the number three amount of points for the Raccoons this week. It was never really close. I'm pretty sure I was back 40 or more points from the first day and just watched them happily trot off into the distance. I didn't really put any pressure on anyone at any point. So good job, guys. The Raccoons come out on top.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out quickly to Yoshida. I know he was like a no-brainer second pick, but man, he's been decent. Like, I honestly thought he would suck. I thought he wouldn't have the power to play and he wouldn't be a good hitter, but he's been as advertised, actually. So, surprising.
Yeah, and also kind of nice to see, right? Like, I would love to see more of that start happening where, you know, we see these guys make a big splash overseas and then they come over and you know what? They're still good here. They, you know, like, I'm done with this elitist North American sports ideology, if you will.
You mean you weren't excited to watch Fujinami give up 8 runs in his first start? Okay, yeah. He plays for the A's, so they're a shithole anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, talk about bad teams. Am I the Oakland A's of this league? That, you know what? That we can put that article up on the site at some point later. But for now, I think we should move on to another fairly lopsided event where we saw the Mad King, or sorry, the renamed Mad King. It was not the name of this team when we made our picks last week, I noticed. But Ryan's team going up against Nick's team. And Ryan comes out on top pretty handily, 379 to 284.4, largely on the backs of Alvarez, Acuna, and McClanahan, and of course he was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna waste too much time analyzing this matchup. I followed it actually a lot because Ryan's my buddy, so I follow his matchups. But he was always in the lead by like 70, 80, 90 points. It wasn't close. Mm-hmm. I'm going to actually focus on, like, why are we letting him – he keeps saying he makes all these deals. Why are we letting him be the Mad King, right? Until we get evidence that he's watched the damn show, ooh, your name goes to whatever the fuck league management wants it to be, sir.
Well, I for one, can't wait to see that Slack battle continue for an 8th month. Just good reading.
I mean, come on, man. Like, it just changed your name. Like – I wouldn't watch the show. I'm not going to lie to you. I wouldn't do that.
Okay. That's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair. Okay. As far as Nick's team's concerned, I think there's some hope for sort of, you know, good times ahead. Obviously, now that he's rocking the Lindor, Lindor's doing fine. Stephen Kwan, you know, my pick of the draft last year, who I then dropped, continues to just absolutely show how big of an idiot I actually am. So good for you, Nick. Well done. Good seeing that as well. But even more, or I suppose even less surprising, is the idea that DeGrom is still putting out DeGrom-type numbers, although those starts are really, really short. Is that something you're worried about?
I mean, I think DeGrom on a per-inning basis is going to be the best pitcher in baseball. I fully believe that. Maybe short of Otani. We'll put Otani aside. But every normal pitcher, DeGrom should be the best pitcher in baseball on a per-inning basis. But do you really – like, I'll ask you. I'll put this into a question for you. Do you think he's going to throw more than 130 innings? Because I don't. He hasn't thrown more than 90 in the past 2 years.
The over-under on 130, I will take the over for this year.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't. I would not. I would not do that. We should write that down as a side, just a side wager as an interesting thing. Cause I don't think he will. I don't think he will.
I think there are two things going for him really well. One, being in Texas to start the season is going to mean a lot more warmer weather early. So he's not going to have that long New York spring that really tends to, you know, that cold weather on the arm, right? Like, there's a reason that we're up here playing slow pitch in Canada and it sucks. But
yeah,
he's not going to have to deal with that nearly as much playing, you know, half his games in the southern part of the U.S. And then second to that, though, it's also just they've got a temperature-controlled environment as well, and that matters. And I think, though, like, that aspect and then also just getting away from the Mets – training staff.
I was going to say that.
It's a good plan if you're a man that has to rely on throwing things, because they just do not seem to be able to, like, my God, Verlander's been there for 5 minutes and he's already on the IL. What the hell's up with that? It's kind of crazy.
I just pictured the Mets pitching staff doing like elbow drops off a table onto some guy's arm as like a way of healing it. But okay, so I'm going to make you feel better about your Stephen Kwan thing with a quick story of my own, which is, but I think it was 2020, the COVID year. A certain pitcher was very hyped, and I made an effort to pick this man up. I was super excited for him. He had a couple of bad starts. Like, I guess, you know, young guys don't always hit the ground running. So I got frustrated and I dropped him. He was later picked up by somebody and has now turned into an amazing starting pitcher. Do you want to guess who that pitcher was?
Pitcher that you dropped that is young but turned out good. Let's go with Shane McClanahan.
No, that was like what I actually got right. Logan Webb, actually.
Oh, Logan fair Webb. Point. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. It happens. It happens. Don't beat yourself up.
Well, thanks. Between you and I think we can probably beat ourselves up and everybody else with us. No one can be as hard on our own teams as we are. So we've got that going for us, which is nice.
Oh, my other hot take before we move on. Nick is going to be like Tom Brady. I think he should have retired on top. He's sticking around too long.
Okay. I mean, he did retire on top for what it's worth.
Yeah. But like Brady, he's come back, and I don't think he's going to win anything until he finally calls it quit. So I'm going to be fading Nick with my picks this year.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm not quite sure how to hold you accountable on that one outside of just the results week to week, but we will have to see for sure. All right. Well, with that, let's move on to the next matchup, a much closer one than any of the matchups we've discussed so far. We've got the fourth quarter Jimmy Butler, Tillo's team, getting a 332.6 to 308.5 win over Jameel's Houston Alliance. What stood out for you on this one?
So to me, this is a, like, just the way the rosters are constructed, this is like a prototypical, I'm really amazing at one thing and I'm meh at the other thing against somebody who's just okay. Like, when you think of, like, other sports, like, a team's got a really sick defense and their offense is just whatever. Like, Tillo's pitching staff is elite. I would say it's probably, like, top two, top three in the league.
Okay.
You know, you're lining up Garrett Cole, Luis Castillo, Chris Sale. When he's healthy, Frankie Montas. Max Scherzer's in there, too, I think. Like, it just goes on and on and on. And if you look, I mean, his top two point getters were pitchers on two start weeks. Yep. Jameel, on the other hand, I don't think he does anything particularly amazing, but he's solid, right? Like, he's got Shane Bieber, but after that, Zach Wheeler. After that, what are you looking at? I don't know. Hitting, he's got some guys, right? Like Gleyber Torres, Jose Abreu, missing somebody here, Carlos Correa. But, like, you're not like, wow, it's so amazing, you can't miss those bats, right? So I think this matchup was decided on the grounds that Tillo did something at an elite level, and it was enough to carry the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the stars and scrubs approach to fantasy baseball is one that's been written for many, many a year. It's harder to do in sort of a deep dynasty format such as we have here. And you're absolutely right. Tillo has assembled a pretty ridiculous, you know, Avengers threat level of a pitching staff. And maybe it does carry him. But, and we've seen this in the past, and I think this is one of the reasons that Tillo has had some bad luck in the playoffs, is that if you are depending almost exclusively upon starting pitching at that, your highs can be very, very high, but those lows, they can really hurt, right? Like, if you've got a guy getting load managed in and around the playoffs, you're dead in the water, right? You're not getting two starts, you're getting zero. And trying to replace a Garrett Cole with somebody off the waiver wire heap, actually impossible. And sure, you try to make up for that with depth, and he's got a lot of depth in that respect as well. But that just arguably makes that problem even more so, right? Like, if all of your guys are pitching on ace day, what happens when ace day doesn't happen enough in a week?
Yeah, and I mean, in the past couple of years especially, it seems to me that, like, the pitching on the wire has gone from, like, usable to, like, disgusting.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Like, I don't even want to start what's out there.
There's nothing there now.
Yeah.
It's week one, now week two. It's already just gross, disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good point. I think the other point, too, is if your starts, especially in the playoffs, like when you're relying on pitching to be really good, if your starts don't line up just right, and I'm not talking even about load management, I'm just talking like, you burn all your two-star aces in round one and you're in the championship and your guys are going like once and it's just a shitty, shitty arrangement where you can't stack. Like, that is very tough to overcome. Very, very tough. Let alone what you're saying with the load management. So I think investing in pitching is especially risky. But he's committed to that. So
Well, and so far it's paid off. It got him a victory here. Sets him right now in fifth overall, and winning a close matchup early. These wins matter all season long. So congratulations to Tillo. Condolences, Jamil. And let's move on. The next one we're going to look at has got the director of the FFFBA going up against the Bash Brothers. So Aiden against RKR. And Aiden really had no difficulties putting up a 440 and a half over RKR's 343.4.
Yeah. And I mean, the interesting thing for Aiden is like the variety of his scoring. Like, nobody had more than 43 points, which means a ton of his players were in the 20 and 30 point range. That's exciting. That's really exciting. I mean, sure, his best guys were his best guys, the Trouts, the Alonzos, the Gossmans of the world. Shout out to that Kevin Gossman trade for all you haters. but you know what? Like, his roster is deeper than you would think. I actually didn't think he would win this matchup. I don't think I picked him.
Neither of us did.
Yeah, neither of us thought he was going to win. So it's surprising. I mean, and on the flip side for RKR, I mean, I'm concerned about Juan Soto. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm concerned about him. I think he, in terms of like what people would be drafting him outside of a dynasty league, is he's being overhyped, right? He's drafted in the first round for a lot of people, and I don't think he's a first round talent this year. But Nick Lodolo is super exciting. RKR just called up Grayson Rodriguez, so I think better times are ahead for him. What about you?
Yeah, the Grayson Rodriguez thing is going to be interesting for sure. So we'll have to see how that plays out. I agree with most everything you're saying. Like, if you open up the box score for this matchup, you can see it's balanced. It's very, very well balanced for Aiden, and that can be tough to beat. No, I just closed things that I wanted to leave open. Anyway, I'll just keep talking through it. And with respect to sort of how RKR did, look, 343.4 is a decent point total. It's not great, but it's not that bad. He just happened to run up against a stronger team. I'm less worried about Soto than I think you are. I'm really worried about O'Neill Cruz now, who's going to miss a substantial amount of time with that injury. But we'll have to see how that plays out over time, I think.
Yeah, well, he's at, what, 4 months? We're talking like August, September at this point anyway. So it's like, to me, I wouldn't be surprised if he lost the year, right? Because even if he comes back, he's not 100%. Guys, these things kind of linger, affects their ability to play, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, the bigger question, I think, is in the future, how does that ankle hold up for somebody who's, what, like 6'7", and 240? Like, running around where speed's like part of his game? I don't know.
Well, and I mean, this is an injury that everyone saw. And now that he's getting that surgery for it, it's probably going to cost him hundreds of millions of dollars. And he can go and cry on Carlos Correa's shoulders when that comes to fruition in 6 years.
I mean, he could just like do the Braves thing with the Pirates and sign like a 10-year deal for like $40 million. Sure, that would also work.
I don't see that happening, though. I'll be honest.
Well, because Pittsburgh's cheap or because he's not worth it?
Because Pittsburgh is cheap.
Okay.
They would probably look at $40 million, even if it was over 10 years, and they'd be like, no, that's way too big a number. We're not going to commit that.
Don't worry, though. We'll sign washed Andrew McCutchen for like $7 million.
There it is. He's coming back home.
Jesus.
All right. Well, let's move ahead again to another fairly close matchup, actually. The Squirtle Squad eke out a victory, 302.1 to 293.5 over Ash's Moneyballers. Under 10 points was the margin of victory on this one. And the Squirtle Squad, while they got the win, this is not one of those big money wins that they would typically rely on. And they come in now as the 10th place team, which is effectively the lowest scoring winning team of the week. Reason to be concerned if you're the Squirtle Squad?
No, I mean, okay, so I swear to God, every year I say this about Ash's first round matchup, but I'm always like, he got outmanaged. This might be the first year Ash has exceeded his start cap in week one. And don't get me wrong, I still think he got outmanaged, but it's not in a way that I would fault most people for being outmanaged. So the Squirtle Squad used all of their matchup acquisitions, every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the way that they used them was actually to rotate out relief pitchers so that they could maximize their RP totals.
Yep.
Because they already had the start thing maxed out, right? 14 versus 13.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like, that's the difference in the matchup, right? If you get like a few extra points with this reliever or that reliever, well, that's like 10 points pretty easily.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, they would outmanage most managers that way unless you were actually paying attention and doing the same thing. So I don't fault Ash for that, but he was outmanaged here, and it was the difference in my opinion. And I wouldn't be concerned if I was them, because you're going to outmanage most people when there's two heads coming together here thinking better than one. Because I do think that dynamic's important, right? If somebody's like, oh, I'm at work, like somebody, the other guy picks up the slack.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of managers don't have that.
It's not that they can't have that, though. Let's be fair. The Squirtle Squad have a very unique situation where not only is it two managers doing it, it's two experienced managers in this league, which is in and of itself a very unique situation due to how unique this league is compared to many other, even other like keeper or dynasty leagues. This one's fairly unique. So there is a benefit to that. And I suppose if I ever sort of hang up my shoes, then, you know, I can go and play second fiddle at somebody else's team and will become the new powerhouse just due to my being there to sort of step in and help in that respect. But even as a standalone, you know, Ash has got a team that looks like you should be able to sort of sit back and watch it go. But what happens when it doesn't, right? As you mentioned, hey, he's got his past his start cap for the first time. Good work. We really like that. But I mean, how much are you putting on and expecting out of Marco Gonzalez ever? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is like his players are guys you think you can plug and play, but his plug and play players are also extremely fucking injury prone or stupid. Like Eloy Jimenez, man, cannot stay healthy. He can't stay healthy. It is fucking impossible for that guy to stay healthy. Why? Because the White Sox play him in left field when he's a fucking DH. Fernando Tatis situation still hasn't played a game.
No, he's still
suspended. Because he has the maturity of a four-year-old who takes PEDs. And he's busy fighting with Cade McClure and fucking AAA over a home run he hit. Like, the guy isn't different. Let's not pretend that he is. And so for Ash, like the Rhys Hoskins thing, that's bad luck. But like when you think about all of this at a macro level, you're like, damn, these guys are injury prone as hell, regardless of whether they're good. Doesn't matter if they're not on the field.
That's fair. And I guess that's part of the risk reward, right? Like the upside on some of these, like the upside of a healthy Eloy Jimenez is probably a top 10 outfielder. And sure. Against any other outfielder you want, right? Like,
sure.
That's up there easily, right? We know what a healthy Tatis can do when he's not either broken or stupid, right? We've seen how far George Springer can just carry, you know, a team, both in fantasy and in real life. Rafael Devers, same idea. But there is that risk. And, well, you win some, you lose some, I guess.
Yeah, just like a cool quirk, though, like Will Smith. Leading the matchup in points for all players. That's pretty cool from a catcher.
Yeah. If you recall, he was my pick to click. So, you know, just calling him all easy.
Yeah. I mean, look at you. You're like Mr. like Illuminati over here predicting the future. Look at that.
You almost had the segue. Illuminati is two matchups away. That was almost really, really
sorry.
Good.
That's
all right. Before we can get there, however, let's go ahead and talk to another of the McInnes clan. We got the Stubby Clap Clappers putting up a week one victory, 347.3 to 326.5 over Penis. Does this get you hard, Jeremiah?
It gets me moist, I'll tell you that. Yeah, like two Blue Jays leading the way. Matt Chapman, AL Player of the Week. And Bo Bichette, the bat is never in doubt, no matter how much the glove sucks, Garth.
Absolutely.
We do not count defensive metrics in this league, so he's great. And Spencer Strider, not surprisingly, also amazing. For Penis, I mean, I think it's just a matter of death, right? Like, Robert, Lizardo, and Senga are probably the guys you would expect if you had to pick three players off his team. Maybe Manoah instead of one of those guys, but what else is there? That's kind of been the question for Lim for a while there now, is what's behind those guys? And I'll tell you, it's not much.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of sort of interesting elements, particularly in the offense, where it's like an interesting blend of old and young, right? Like Elvis Andrews has been old for a while. He's only got older. Trey Mancini, again, not as young as you want him to be. Will Myers, same idea. You know, but then you've got some of the younger guys like Kybert Ruiz, like Luis Robert Jr. Like, they're there, but they have to perform. And it didn't work out this week, but that's in large part because of what Matt Chapman did almost by himself. A 54.8 week when you're not Shohei Ohtani is a very impressive point total, to put it mildly. My question, though, and maybe it's a little off script, but can Matt Chapman pitch? Because the Jays could use that.
Yeah. I mean, no, I obviously not. I don't know if anyone could pitch on the Jays right now. So.
Yeah. It's getting a little hard to watch. It's getting a little hard to watch for sure.
Well, you called that too, right? Like you said, you were fading every Jays pitcher.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, like every single five.
Except Gausman. I didn't fade Gausman. Right there, I was okay with him.
Yeah.
Well, I think you were, like, cautiously optimistic. I think you were like, eh. And you know what? Gausman's been the best one.
Like, Manoa, shitty start tonight. Two out of three shitty starts, yeah. I guess. Barrios, we know, is garbage. Bassett, jury's out on that guy, I guess. He bounced back, sort of. But you say Kikuchi being your second best starter is a frightening prospect for a contender. So.
It's true. And luckily, neither of these teams have Kikuchi. Otherwise, their point totals would have been lower. All right. Well, again, good job to the McInnes clan getting twin wins. I don't think that happens often, typically because Garth McInnes is a 50-50 shot any given week. So there's that. All right. Well, let's advance to the biggest blowout of the week, where we've got Graham's big beefy baseball boys going up against Kaminsky's Illuminati. And Graham throws a 440.1 up against Illuminati's 212.5. More than doubling what Illuminati could put up over the 2 week period that we effectively had. Do you think Mike is just destined for the basement, or do you think he's got maybe a higher seed in mind?
No. Like, there's a basement, and then there's like that cold cellar in the bottom of your basement that's like a staircase down into where you're like people get murdered in there. That's where Mike's residing this year.
Okay.
I have no doubt about that. So let's, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time on that. But the big beefy baseball boys, I mean, they sure were beefy, weren't they? Like, you were saying how Matt Chapman and his 54 points was like amazing. Well, how about 61 points?
Yeah.
How about Randy Arozarena having 44 points? For people that were like, that trade doesn't look so good. I mean, that's pretty fucking good to me. Wish he was on my team. So, I mean, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this was you also who picked Graham as your dark horse pick to go far in the playoffs. Was that you?
That was me, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of the predictions coming up, Garth, this week, but it's looking pretty good.
Well, yeah, and I mean, not to give away the spoiler, but in this week's matchup, I picked Graham to win. You picked Kaminsky, so just, you know, I just want to point out how that pick should be worth double.
I mean, I'm a moron, so that's probably true.
Fair enough.
So, okay, let me ask you one thing. So we gave Graham a little bit of his time in the sun here. Do you feel more or less confident in Graham as a heavyweight contender now after watching this? And are you willing to make an even bolder statement about his success?
I think that Graham has the top-end pieces necessary to put up a very, very good regular season if they can all stay healthy. And if they can, then in turn, I do see him being able to go far in the playoffs because, you know, 1 week is as important as the next week once it gets to to that depth. So, yeah, I still stand beside my my dark horse pick of Graham going, being a playoff team and, you know, going deep.
At this rate, he's not going to be a dark horse for very long.
Yeah. Good times. Good, clean fun. Well, I think at this point, it's finally time to talk about your matchup, which was close. It was fairly close. And we see that Chow's size matters. 329.2 to a 317.9 victory over your team, Jeremiah. I mean, you put up the basically the best total of a losing team, if that's any consolation, as you're sitting now in the 11th place, having lost to the 9th place team. So close matchup. And it comes down to you didn't have Jeffrey Springs.
I mean, what it came down to was the weekend, and I lined up a bunch of fucking losers to pitch, and that's what they did. So coming into the weekend, I think I had, I have to go back and look, but I had like two or three guys on the Friday and three guys on the Saturday. So I had like five starts, and I was feeling pretty good about it. And I was actually up points. I was up like 50 points at this point. And I was like, man, I just need a decent day, and I'm in the bag. And sure enough, we get like that Jose Barrio start. We got Brady Singer and Luis Garcia putting up like 5 points together. It was a mess. So pitching matters. And when you don't have it, like I didn't have it on the weekend, it's a tough go. And then he rolls down another Jeffrey Springs start and some amazing Sunday bats. I think Judge and Willie Adames maybe had two home runs each. I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah, so Adames did have a home run, okay. And Judge had two. I mean, it was only one home run, but then, you know, a double, a single, runs, a pile of RBIs. Yeah. Like it was a 13-point outing. You know, Willie Adames beat you himself on Sunday.
Yeah, so what are you going to do? I mean, I didn't think I was going to get, I think it was, if you look on the Saturday, maybe it was like three starters or four starters put up like 8 points. What are you going to do with that? You know, what are you going to do with that? So,
well, still, it's a close matchup. You're not, you know, hundreds of points away. No. You're right there. So I think there's still some hope. There's still some way to feel like there's net positives in your future. And I mean, it's not like you're not making moves to try and make that happen. Your recent acquisition of Wander Franco, putting up 42.3 points, looks amazing. He is looking like, well, exactly what everybody said he was going to be, right? He's starting to tap into that power. He has always had a great bat to ball skill, but it's been really held back by the lack of power. And if he is tapping into some of that power, he's still very young and very good. And that's a winning combination right there on a Rays team who, might I add, are ridiculous right now. Having, I think I heard a stat earlier this week that they not only are they 10-0, but they are also leading the league in strikeouts while striking out the least, and leading the league in number of home runs while giving up the fewest runs overall.
I mean, I heard something.
You're the best at pitching and the best at hitting, you win.
I mean, I heard something that said that they had the best run differential through 10 games since like 1868 or something like that. So it was some team none of us have ever heard of, like the Oklahoma City Barons or something. Nobody's heard of. You know, honestly, the guy I'm most excited about actually isn't Wander Franco. And it's more from like a real life perspective than it is maybe fantasy. But Dalton Varsho has looked really good for the Jays, hasn't he?
It's not been bad. I mean, at the very least, he's delivering on some of that speed. And I mean, there's been some throws that he's had this season that have been just amazing. Kind of remind me of Jose Bautista back when he was willing to play throw, the infield. That's exciting to watch. I'm still an individual that loves watching good defense. I'm not saying I want to see everybody strike out, but you know, if you can make plays in the field, if you can get the guy trying to grab that extra base or throw behind the runner to get, like, that's exciting baseball for me. So yeah, no, it's been very good. And he hasn't been bad at the plate by any stretch.
Yeah, he walks. He's got good speed. He gunned down. Was it in St. Louis or maybe it was Kansas? No, it was Kansas City, right? He gunned somebody down from left field. He's got like the Matt Chapman in the outfield vibes to me, like a hardworking guy. The bat is kind of suspect, right? Like people think the bat is maybe worse than it is, but the potential is there for the bat to be great. And he's a good defender. So I'm excited from a real life perspective to have him. But yeah, Franco could be good too. I think he's well on his way.
Yeah, he could be all right. He you know.
He could be all right.
Maybe he'll live up to the hype. All right. Well, talking about hype, we now get to finish it off. Our last matchup of the night, I believe we're going to be talking about Chris's Mummy's Good Boy against the Club Atletico de Flex, manned by Adam. And Flex takes the loss with a 333.8 to a 262.6, which neither of us selected, just so we're clear. What do you think this means for Flex?
Well, I was going to say neither of us picked him. I think, and this is just like a common theme, is that younger players struggle more now in their first taste of the majors. So Flex is basically buoyed by a bunch of guys who are breakout candidates as young prospects. Ezekiel Tovar, Riley Green, Corbin Carroll, Michael Harris, guys like that. Harris is hurt now. Carroll was pretty good, 31 points, but the other two, not so good, right? Like Riley Green's taken a bit to get going. Tovar hasn't really done much of anything. And his pitching staff beyond Logan Gilbert and Logan Webb is not anything to write home about at this point. So I think he needs some growth. And I think this is just a sign to him that maybe things are growing organically and not necessarily at lightning speed.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can agree with most of that. I mean, he's still got some pieces that I would love to have on my own team. Like I think you can do worse in an infinite keeper league than having, you know, Corbin Carroll and Michael Harris, as well as guys like Riley Green and CJ Abrams, right? Like these are top flight prospects back in the day, which don't always work out. We all agree. But even now, I don't believe anyone would be like, Corbin Carroll's going to bust. Now, there's still a great deal of excitement around him. Ezekiel Tovar, okay, I'm going to pump the brakes on that one a little bit. I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, he's a big shortstop in Colorado, and I guess that's worked out before. But is this kid really going to be Tulowitzki? I don't think so. So we'll see about that. But his pitching staff, you know, let him down a bit this week, but it's still got, again, a lot of those pieces with Logan Webb, Logan Gilbert kicking around, you know, Kyle Bradish. It's an unfortunate injury, I suppose, but I don't know. We'll see on that. And then, you know, Edward Cabrera as well, who I thought was going to do a lot better than he did. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing with this matchup that you can basically pin it down to, if you really want to, is this matchup was decided by Adam Duvall, who put up 64.2 points, which is, you know, give or take maybe 20 points, obviously, but in the realm of the difference in the matchup.
Yeah.
Well, Adam Duvall's hurt now. I don't think even if he wasn't hurt that we would expect him to put up 60 points any other week of the season. So that doesn't happen. This matchup could easily go another way.
True.
And I think that's the other way you look at it if you're Flex, right? It's like you got beat by a guy having an incredible 10 days. And that's going to happen sometimes. But his guys also underperformed, right? Like, you're going to pump the brakes on Tovar, and that's fine. I'm not saying Carroll's bad. That's not what I meant. He's amazing, and so is Harris. But, like, Riley Green, Ezekiel Tovar, these are guys that, like, have huge prospect pedigree, but it doesn't always come together right away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it turns out you got to learn how to walk before you can run.
Or stand up.
Or stand up. That's true. Yeah. Or fall over. For Chris's team, obviously, you know, Adam Duvall carried the flag on this one and almost single-handedly got him for it. But he also got some interesting numbers out of Freddie Freeman, who it looks to be once again just that Freddie Freeman. Tyro Estrada was the surprise for me. That was a much more productive week than I was expecting out of, you know, the nobody shortstop slash, well, middle infielder, if you will, on a team that tried to go out and get Carlos Correa and failed, right? It's like, here's your chopped liver. I hope it works out. But beyond that, I mean, Chris's team, I guess, has pieces that are interesting. If Kyle Freeland can put up, you know, 17 point outings all year, that'll work. But we'll see what happens when he's not at San Diego and not, you know, home to Washington, right? Like, these are matchups he, you know, those are nicer ballparks and then a bad team, right? So,
well, yeah, I mean, Kyle, aka Krista Freeland, was my pick for who was interesting, actually, because I do think last year he still would have stunk up the joint. I mean, sure, it's the Nationals at home, but it's still at Coors Field.
Yep.
And he would have just been a gas can at Coors Field last year. So maybe he's taking a step forward. That would be really good for Chris.
It would be very good for Chris. And he's got to make up for that Duvall injury somehow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that gets us through all of these matchups. I'm just going to quickly review where we are on the picks. And when we post this this podcast live, I will slap on the screenshot of what the picks were and how they shook out. But basically, the things we both got wrong, we both picked RKR, and that didn't work. Aiden won that. We also both picked Flex to beat Chris, and that obviously didn't work out. But otherwise, the long and the short of it is, I got 7 right, you got 5. Jeremiah, have you started trying to figure out, at the very least, what backbeat you're going to use in your rap styling later this year?
I mean, full disclosure, I've looked at what app I should be recording on.
Ooh, okay.
Because I only made that one diss track like a few years ago, and I don't think that app is still viable anymore. But I think Tillo would know, or okay. Jamil. I think one of those two gave it to me. So they would, if those guys listen, then like hit me up with an app that I can record some beats on, and I will get it on my phone in preparation of my impending L.
All right. Well, I mean, you're only back 2 picks currently. I mean, you're okay. right now you're picking at a coin flip rate. You're 50-50. I'm okay. Pretty sure you're going to do better than 50-50 from the end of the year.
Let's hope so. Otherwise, I have no chance.
I mean, fair. All right. Well, before we get into sort of the next week's forecast and picks for that as well, Jeremiah, I was wondering if you wanted to take a couple seconds to review one of the larger trades that we saw go down this past week, specifically the one involving Byron Buxton and Gorman actually going back the other side. Do you want to take a look at that?
You know I do. You know I do. Okay. So, I mean, when I saw it, I was actually kind of like thrown off. I was kind of like, whoa, this is a really interesting move for both teams. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think it's a win-win for both teams because I know Mike needs infielders and Nolan Gorman started off really hot. I mean, he's kind of cooled off now.
Sure.
And he's not playing every day. So there's a playing time concern and that might take a season or two to iron out, but the bat looks legitimate. And that was kind of his calling card as a prospect was that he can hit the ball. Might have some strikeout issues. His defense isn't amazing, and they have Brendan Donovan at second base, his natural position. So we're looking at a guy that's going to DH, and then at that point, he's probably platooning with somebody at the DH position because they have too many outfielders. Versus Buxton, who to me is probably the number one player in baseball with untapped potential. Like, we don't know what he is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen stats for him where like they've taken 162 games and he's been like 50 home runs, 40 steals, 120 RBI. And like, if you asked me that 2 years ago, I'd be like, that's definitely possible. But he's pushing 30 now, which as I'm learning is a hard age to overcome. And so your body starts breaking down a little bit. You get a little bit more injury prone. The Twins aren't playing him in center field anymore. They're DHing him almost exclusively now, I think, to protect his body from the injuries of playing outfield. Which could work, right, if he just has to focus on hitting. But I don't know with certainty what he is moving forward. Like, I actually have no clue. Because I don't think he's that 50 homer, 40 steal guy. So maybe he's 25-20. So I like the deal for both sides. I think it has potential. But I'd give the win to Jamil based on Buxton's upside in the immediate future. How do you see it?
I see it kind of similar. I find it, for me, I think the interesting part was more the idea that this sort of showcases where these two teams are. right? Like, and I mean, we don't need to pile on Mike's week one output, but it's very clear he's not a team in competition mode. He's very obviously in building mode. And while Byron Buxton is a hell of a piece, he's probably not that piece in 4 or 5 years when Kaminsky turns the corner and becomes competitive again. Whereas Jamil is right there, right? He needs that one or two pieces just to get over the top and really sort of make that deep run into the playoffs. And so while Nolan Gorman is nice for the future, if you're win now mode, you want Buxton over Gorman. And if you've got the space for him, yeah, you go for it. And then you just pray to Jobu and the rest of the gods to keep him healthy and make sure that he's going to play. Because honestly, if Byron Buxton can put up 450, 500 plate appearances this year, he could very well carry Jamil's team deep.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. He also plays center field, one of the weakest positions. And he didn't need Gorman because he has Gleyber Torres at second base already.
Yeah.
I guess, and I'm not going to disclose, I guess, what Mike and I discussed as a trade package, but I was talking to him for Buxton right before this happened. And he was asking me for a significant, what I perceived to be a significantly higher price.
Okay.
So I do find it interesting that he took basically just Gorman. I mean, I think there was some like fringy prospects included in your picks, but like nothing to write home about.
So you've got Zach Deloach in there and then also a first round low minors pick.
Okay.
So went back. So I mean, like it's a little bit more on the prospect capital. And I mean Zach Deloach is having a huge season right now in AAA for Seattle. I mean, it's only like 7 games in, but he's putting up just silly, silly numbers. And he's kind of that speed power combination with a low bat, but he's not like super speed and super power. So we'll see how that works out. But honestly, if he can put it all together, he's got all of the pieces that should translate into a useful outfielder if Seattle ever had need of one. Personally, I don't think Seattle holds him. I think he gets traded on or before the deadline because, you know, that's what Seattle does.
Well, I mean, that low minors pick kind of changes the equation a bit for me as well, because like Jamil is at that stage and I would classify him as a team that's either like squeaking into the playoffs or a strong Europa heavyweight.
Sure.
And those are the kind of picks you want, because at this point in the season, you have no idea who's going to be in Europa and who's going to be in the playoffs. But if you can get a team that you perceive to be between like, let's say 6 and 12, that's pretty outstanding because you're holding a lottery ticket for a pick that could be top five. And as I've been talking and reading and speaking with people about, like, this draft is projected to be, according to scouts, the best draft since the Steven Strasburg Garrett Cole draft of 2011.
Yep.
So we could be looking at some elite generational talent coming through, and you want those picks. So
yeah,
it's a good snag for Mike. Good get, for sure.
Good get. All right. Well, you heard it here first, people. Jeremiah believes that was a good get. All right. Well, we got let's see if we can't burn through the this week's picks. I don't know how deep you want to go into the analysis side. I'm basically just going to sort of pick my win, give a 3-second explanation as to why, and sometimes it'll just because that's how it feels. But what do you think? Can we get through these 10 in pretty quick order, and I will take notes on who we're saying is going to win.
Yeah, let's rapid fire. I'm good to go.
All right, let's go ahead and we'll start at the top of the scoreboard. We've got the Squirtle Squad going up against me, A Measure of Force, and I don't need to take 30 seconds to explain why Squirtle Squad's going to win. They're winning now, and I'm positive Max Muncy is not going to score 22 points every night that he plays. Hell, they're not even playing him tonight. I got injuries mounting up already. I don't see any path that I win going forward. I'm taking the Squirtle Squad on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a boring pick, but I'm with you. Better team, better, more trustworthy top-end talent. Bregman turning it around is interesting. Max Muncy, you should probably sell at some point if he's going to keep doing this. So, yeah, give me the Squirtle Squad as well.
All right. And I guess I can just have you go run my trades then. If you can find me a good deal for Max Muncy, let me know, okay?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to hit me up by a Slack as a, what are those called?
Broker?
I don't know. It'll come to me, but, you know, on behalf of Garth.
Yeah, it's usually a broker.
Thank you.
Surrogate. You're not having my baby.
Well, that could have multiple meanings. I think surrogate also has a different meaning, but I could be wrong there. Anyway, hit me up.
All right.
Broker your trade.
There it is. There it is. Okay, let's jump ahead to the next one. We've got Tilo going up against the man, Nick. Who you got?
You know who I got. I said I was fading Nick, and I mean that. Give me Tilo.
Yeah, my pick is the same as well. I am always high on Tilo. That pitching staff, just you have to ride it until it breaks down. Even though Nick's got a pretty solid top end in his own right, I'm going to take Tilo, and it's not going to be difficult for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw something in here because we get 20 seconds or whatever, but I saw Nick Pivetta pitch the other night. I was watching the Rays and Red Sox on Sportsnet, and I saw Nick Pivetta's face for the first time, and I was like, holy shit, that looks nothing like his photo. Like, he needs a new photo. So, yeah, that was my takeaway from the Red Sox and Rays. Interesting two start weeks for Cole, it looks like, and DeGrom, maybe not.
Should
maybe
be
two start weeks for both of them. So that's going to be a brawl. Can't wait for that.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if these are two of the top scoring teams just on the basis of that alone. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. We got the Mad King going up against the director of the FFFBA. I am going to pick Ryan on this one. I just think he's got the stronger team. And even though Aiden put up the second most points in that first week, I'm not as convinced he can repeat independent of what Zach Gallen has already done this week.
Yeah, give me the director of the FFFBA, actually. First pick of divergence here, partly because I want to be different, but also because I strongly believe that we're going to get 50 points from Zach Gallen this week. I'm not going to lie to you. I think Ryan is a better team, but great teams have bad weeks. And Aiden is primed after last week to take advantage of it because he has the firepower. That's what we've learned. He's got tons of guys who can put up points. So this is the week Ryan kind of stumbles and Aiden takes advantage of that.
All right. Ryan losing his undefeated streak in the second week of the season will be news for next week, perhaps. All right. Well, let's jump to, we've got the Houston Alliance facing off against Ash's Money Ballers. Who you got in this one?
Okay. I am going to take the Houston Alliance, but only, I really want to take Ash, but I just can't with the injuries. I just can't do it. If Tatis was back this week, like a full week, I'd probably ride Ash, but he's not. So give me the Houston Alliance.
Yep, I'm on that pick as well. This week, there's already a fairly substantial lead. And honestly, if Kyle Schwarber is already putting up 12 points, you know, it's just going to be one of those weeks. I love watching that boy swing a bat. It's just so violent. Great.
He belongs on Big Beefy Baseball Boys, just on principle.
Oh, you're not wrong. There you go. Jeremiah, we're trying to broker another trade. Reach out, everyone. He's got this stuff. All right. Moving on, we've got RKR Bash Brothers going up against P. Nis. And as much as I hate to say it, I have to pick P. Nis on this one. I think the injuries that RKR is sort of looking at is just going to be a little too much for him to overcome in the first week that it happens. I still like his team long term, but for this one, I'm going with the Nis. You?
The words "I pick penis" just can't come out of my mouth. So on that basis alone, I'm going to take the Bash Brothers. I think we talked about it. He called up Grayson Rodriguez. He's going to get a start out of him. I have no idea how that's going because I'm not checking the live stats too hard. But I just think there's more talent on RKR's team. Looks like Penis has maxed out in terms of he's riding Ashcraft. He's riding Arise. I think there's more to come from RKR. So I'm going to go with him.
All right. Sounds good. What about in the matchup between the Illuminati and Stubby Clap Clappers? Right now, it's a close one. Where are you picking?
I'm actually going to go with the Illuminati. I'm going to take him to get a win. I just think the gods of fantasy baseball will never allow Garth MacInnis to be anywhere substantially above 500. So gotta go with the Illuminati.
All right. Well, for me, until I see that Matt Chapman has actually been injured, I have no reason to assume that the ridiculous pace that he is on. So I'm going to go for a 2-week win streak for Garth MacInnis and the Clap Clappers. And I don't actually think it'll be that hard. I don't see Alec Bohm being able to carry this inflated point total over the rest of the week. We'll see. But yeah, I'm going to go with Garth on that one. In the next matchup between the Midland Raccoons and Ben's Star Boys, right now we've got Ben ahead a lot. And that's where my pick is going to go. I don't actually see this one being difficult. I know the Raccoons had a good week last week and Ben had a bad week. And while that shouldn't matter, I don't see Ben being held down like he was last week again.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got to go with Ben. I don't know if you heard me, but I was knocking on hard wood while you were voodooing Matt Chapman into an injury, so I'm protecting our interests. But yeah, I got Ben as well. That lead's huge. Ben is the better team on paper. Give us Ben. Round of Ben.
Next time, try to knock on hardwood when we're talking about the penis matchup. You missed your segue again, my friend.
Well,
all right. Well, maybe
that's why you're the host.
Maybe that's it. maybe we can just go from your hardwood into the big beefy baseball boys against Chow's Size Matters, another matchup that is already has a very, very wide margin early in the week. Where's your pick?
Boys, huge lead. They're big, they're beefy. I mean, they're going to take it home. Come on. I know you have this pick too.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I do have Graham. It wasn't actually that rough a pick for me. In large part because I already saw that Ryan Mountcastle has a week's worth of points in 2 days, and that's not getting taken away. So, no. Yeah. Seeing big points out of Lopez as well, knowing he's going to go twice, is another reason for good news. Whereas Chow right now is riding a reliever, which is never good. We'll see how the Corbin Burns, start goes. Actually, it might be done. I haven't checked the scores yet, so... That's
he's
fine.
At 5 points allegedly.
Yeah, is that game over? I'm not sure.
I don't think so, but he's not looking so hot these days. So yeah.
All right, so we're both on Graham. Mm-hmm. Let's now talk about last week's big money winner, the Stadelmann Stars, who currently have a 25 point lead over Mummy's Good Boys with Chris's team. My pick on here is going to be, I'm going to go with Stads. I think he can go 2-0, and I don't think he'll have too much of an issue with it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to differentiate our picks. We have something for the listeners, but you know what? It's tough when he's got almost a 2-1 advantage, and Ohtani and Vlad aren't even in his top three scorers. So I don't see this going any other way either. I'm going to take Stads too.
All right, and we saved... I don't know if it's the best for last, but I mean, at the very least, it's currently the top scoring team. Chaos reigns supreme, facing off against Flex's lowly Club Atletico de Flex. Right now, it's a big separation. My pick is Jeremiah on this one. I don't need to go into too many details, and I'll give you the time you need to espouse the glory of your pick.
Yeah, I mean, so I've gone back and forth. I kind of want to not pick me, but then last week that didn't work out either. So I'm gonna pick the easy way out here and pick myself.
Okay.
I have a better team. I mean, I think at this point, maybe not in a year or two, but definitely right now. And Austin Hayes leading the way. Like, that's surprising. I don't know what to think about that because he was solid last year, 280 points ish, and
yeah.
It's continuing to be solid, so I don't know. But yeah, anyway, I have the better team. This should be a W, but I won't be surprised if I collapse down the stretch.
All right. So I mean, that is some self-negativity that I'm used to hearing from my own voice. So welcome to the club, my friend.
Yes.
All right. Well, before we wrap this up, Jeremiah, I'll give you a quick rundown of where the picks look like for this week. We are both on Squirtle Squad, Tillo, Jamil, Jamil, Ben Graham, Stads, and yourself. And we are differing on Mad King v. Aiden, Penis v. RKR, Garth McInnes v. Kaminsky. There's room for you to catch up. It's only two picks.
It's going to be hard, right? Because I think most weeks the problem for us is we're taking like six or seven of the same picks.
Yeah.
But that's probably just because the matchups are looking pretty lopsided when we pick. It'd be interesting if we had to pick at like 0-0 what that would go with. It'd be interesting. We should try one week.
I will make that change myself. I will add my picks well before the week starts going forward, and we'll you're welcome to you can handicap yourself. I don't care. I trust you. It's an honors game. I'd shake your hand, but we're not in the same place. But you know, we can see how that goes.
Well, I can try. I'll try sending them to you on Slack. How's that? That way, you can just hold me to that list, and I'll send it to you. I guess when the matchups end, like Sunday night. Try send them to you Sunday night.
Okay.
I'm going to the Jays game on Friday. I'm going to watch Jose Barrios shit the bed in person.
Oh, God.
It just happened to go that way. My brother wanted to go, and we want to check out the renos and stuff. So he was like, oh, Friday, let's go. Fun fact to those wanting to go, you can get a $20 ticket into the building, but you don't get a seat. So you just roam around the shitty like bars and shit. Not what we're doing. We're sitting baseline, but I'm going to watch Jose Barrios crap his pants in person. Should be fantastic. I'm not even going to start him. So
I guess the question that I have then is, are we going to see you on camera for some momentous play looking like you're just sick of the world, despite the fact that history has happened, you know, six seats to your right?
You know, what's funny about that, that whole photo, that whole TV clip was there was like, I wasn't actually sad about the home run. I was sad about the annoying fuckers around us with the sign being like, come on, Mickey, hit it here, Mickey. And then, of course, he hits it. Not just out of the park, but like to that section where those fuckers were holding the sign. And I was just defeated. I was like, the world just hates me right now. My fiance's there. She doesn't really understand what's going on. So I'm like explaining to her that this is like some monumental thing. We're going to probably be on TV. Sure enough, we were on TV and someone clipped that as an emoji. So that's the highlight of my life, probably.
I mean, when it comes to 15 minutes of fame, I suppose you can do worse than being a part of actual history. So you've got that going for you, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I should have been at this series, eh? Because Miggy's back in town. They probably should have given me free tickets or something.
Maybe. All right. Well, enjoy yourself this Friday. And good luck in your matchup and the rest of your picks as well. Jeremiah, before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like to offer tonight?
No, I mean, I could talk for another minute and 20 seconds to get us to 69 minutes, but I won't do that.
Wow. Well, okay. That was a decision that was just made live here in front of everyone. And with that, I will say thank you, Jeremiah, for joining me. This is once again Garth Newton signing off this week's edition. And to everyone out there, good night and good fantasy.